A provocative ESPN report about the leadership at Patriot Place details growing tension and a possible rift between Bill Belichick, Tom Brady, and Robert Kraft. It's Friday, January 5th. I'm Chris Gasper, and welcome to Season Ticket to break down Seth Wickersham's story about the Patriots and about some discord between the Holy Trinity of Brady, Belichick, and Kraft. We now bring in Boston Globe senior NFL writer Ben Volen. Ben, how are you doing today?
Doing well, and always a good Patriots controversy to get us through the bye weekend here.
Yeah, right? This is an ideally timed story. So let's dive right into this thing. To me, what was interesting is that Seth Wickersham has it in this story that 2 weeks before the trade deadline, Belichick and Kraft meet to discuss the quarterback situation. It's a very long meeting lasting half the day, pushing back Belichick's other meetings, according to Wickersham. That had the office buzzing there. The meeting ends, according to Wickersham, with a clear mandate from Kraft to Belichick, trade Jimmy Garoppolo because he's not in the team's long-term plans. Obviously, that benefits Tom Brady. Do you think Brady went around Belichick here to get Garoppolo traded?
Well, certainly the story implies that. Brady started meeting with Kraft in October to talk about his long-term future. And while there may not have been a direct mandate from Brady, hey, trade this guy or else I'm out of here or whatever, it does seem like he made a power play and put the pressure on the Patriots to, hey, it's either him or me. And I think in the end, obviously, the Patriots are going to be loyal, or Robert Kraft, at least, is going to be loyal to Tom Brady. So it's not all fun and games in Foxborough right now. There's clearly some issues going on behind the scenes.
Well, I think from a bigger picture standpoint, that having covered this team for quite a while, I always felt that at some point Kraft was going to have to sort of choose between Belichick and Brady. And I don't mean that from an employment standpoint, but I mean there was going to come a point in time where he was going to have to side with one or the other when it came to Tom's career. And it seems like, based on the fact Jimmy Garoppolo is not here and that trade was really puzzling to a lot of people, and you had a great column in the Globe saying, hey, like, the Patriots should just come out here and admit that keeping Brady and loyalty to Brady was a big part of trading Jimmy. So when you look at this, it seems like Kraft came down on the side of Brady here instead of Belichick. And I wonder what the repercussions are long term for the Patriots with that and with Belichick.
Yeah, I think the article certainly infers, well, you know, Belichick might be on the way out after this, that he kind of, as you mentioned, he kind of lost the power struggle. It said he was demoralized after being told that he had to trade Jimmy Garoppolo. And I understand why Belichick would be upset. He drafted Garoppolo. The whole goal is to go from one star quarterback to the next, just like the 49ers did and the Packers. And Belichick had it all set up. He had the guy groomed. He picked the right guy. And then when time came, the Patriots threw all their rules out the window and they chose the old guy over the young guy. And they stuck with Tom Brady and forced Bill Belichick to give up his kind of hand groomed successor. And so if you're Belichick, you, of course you're upset. Hey, I set it all up for you guys and you don't want Aaron Rodgers, then fine. You know, the other thing I find interesting, Chris, is the Alex Guerrero angle of this and how the article portrays him as maybe trying to purposely drive a wedge into the Patriots. Like, Belichick said that players can no longer see Alex at Gillette Stadium, but Alex tried to tell the players, well, Belichick's trying to ban you from going to me altogether and trying to create some resentment there. And this anecdote about Jimmy Garoppolo shows up to get treatment from Guerrero and Garoppolo gets locked out of the facility like he's being frozen out by Brady and his right-hand man. I find that to be very interesting and, if true, incredibly petty as well. And that to me goes to show what really the Brady Garoppolo relationship was like behind closed doors.
Yeah, certainly Guerrero not portrayed favorably in this. And there's been a lot of discussion, I think, and conjecture surrounding the fact that Alex is no longer on the sidelines this year for the Patriot games, the road games, I should specify, because as you pointed out in the past, it was just road games, not home games before when he had those privileges. And, you know, he's only allowed to treat Brady inside the building. Other players have to go to that TB12 sports therapy center that they have at Patriot Place. I want to go back to what you said about Garoppolo, because you're right. This was one of the most interesting anecdotes, tidbits in this thing from Seth Wickersham. And he's talking about when Tom Brady's serving the 4-game Deflategate suspension last year, and Garoppolo's the starter. In his second start against the Miami Dolphins, Kiko Alonso knocks him out of that game with a shoulder injury. I believe it was a sprained AC joint. And so Garoppolo goes to TB12 to get treatment. And according to the story, He shows up there. The door's locked. He knocks on the door. Nobody's there. Nobody lets him in. He calls the TB12 trainers. Nobody answers the phone for Jimmy Garoppolo, Patriots. But at that time, the starting quarterback for the Patriots, nobody will answer the phone for him to get treatment. Garoppolo could not believe this. He told the staffers, the Patriots medical staffers, about this and had to go to the team trainers. Now, look, Guerrero denied this to Wickersham in the story. And eventually, Garoppolo was treated at TB12. But let's be honest, don't we all think Tom ordered the code red there? It was like, no, you're not. This guy's my competition. We're not helping him get healthy. We're not helping him get back on the field before I come back. I think it paints Tom in a bad light.
No question. You know, I always thought the mentor-mentee relationship between Brady and Garoppolo that everyone loves to talk about, I always thought that was way overrated and overblown. You know, I definitely did not get a sense that Brady was ever taking Garoppolo aside and putting his arm around him and giving him useful tips. I think Brady put up with him. I think, you know, they generally got along pretty well. They spent a lot of time together in the film room. But, like, the extent of it was Brady allowed Garoppolo to observe him, basically. Like, you want to watch film with me? Fine. But I'm not going to give you pointers, and I'm not going to tell you how to take over my job. And I think that's natural. I think you saw that, obviously, with Favre and Rodgers and Montana and Young. The young guy is threatening you, and I don't think Brady totally embraced him. And just, if his story is true, that takes it to a whole nother level, that they completely froze Garoppolo out. Again, they don't hate each other. Garoppolo would join Brady on the trip to the Kentucky Derby every year. So I think they got along. But Brady was definitely not being the mentor to Garoppolo, because Jimmy was the threat. Jimmy was the guy who's going to end Brady's career. And, you know, I think drafting Garoppolo was the best thing that ever happened in Brady's career, because it really lit a fire under him. You go back and look at his stats. His passer rating was decreasing every single year leading up to 2014. And then they got Garoppolo, and Brady's, you know, just a career renaissance after that. His stats exploded after Garoppolo came aboard. So
interesting.
Yeah, very interesting with that relationship all the way around.
Although the one thing I'll say on that is, and I know you remember this, Ben, 2013 is the first year there's no Wes Welker, and he's out there throwing to Kembrell Tompkins and Josh Boyce and Aaron Dobson. So that will definitely decrease your passer rating. And then the next year, you know, it was a little bit better with what they brought in Brandon LaFell, and you had, you know, Julian Edelman obviously there. It would really sort of taken over that role, and Danny Amendola was comfortable. But that's an interesting point you make about Garoppolo pushing Brady. It's funny. I spoke to somebody who was once employed by the Patriots and had the opportunity to witness some of the interactions between Garoppolo and Brady. And this person was saying that the interactions between Brady and Garoppolo were different than between Brady and any of the other backup quarterbacks that had come before Jimmy G. People like Matt Castle, that Brady was sort of buddy-buddy with those guys. And this was a little different. He wasn't, you know, it wasn't like mean girls with Jimmy, but he definitely, like you said, regarded him as a threat and as someone who could take his job. And with Tom having grown up in the Bay Area, he certainly witnessed, and he's spoken about this, you know, seeing what took place between Joe Montana and Steve Young. And I think he's always been kind of mindful of that. And the big takeaway I have from this Seth Wickersham story is that Jimmy Garoppolo's legacy as a New England Patriot, believe it or not, might be driving a wedge between Brady and Belichick and between Belichick and Kraft. That might be his lasting legacy here.
Yeah, no question. An interesting nugget in the story was that Belichick takes a lot of pride in how Garoppolo is playing for San Francisco, that he's 5-0. And so part of his legacy will be that Belichick finally developed a heck of a quarterback other than Brady, because all those other guys that you mentioned didn't really work out too well. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, Jimmy was the first guy. He was the highest quarterback drafted by Belichick in this era. And he was not brought in to be a backup, unlike Jacoby Brissett and Ryan Mallett and Matt Castle. He was brought in to be groomed to be the successor. And it's worked out great for Tom Brady and the Patriots, because they've won two Super Bowls and maybe three. But as you said, it's certainly driving a wedge in this relationship between Brady, Kraft, and Belichick.
There's a line here from Wickersham where he says Kraft acknowledges the idea that trading Jimmy Garoppolo might have been a mistake. Do you think that was a mistake by the Patriots to deal Garoppolo, to not hold on to him, franchise him, do whatever you have to do to have a situation where he can succeed Brady, or at some point you make a decision and say, Tom, thanks for all the Super Bowl rings, but Jimmy's the future?
Yeah, I mean, from a football perspective, 100% this was a mistake. There's a rule in the NFL. I mean, you don't let talented players outside the building. You don't let them leave And that especially holds true for quarterbacks. That's the most important position in all of sports. And the Patriots had a guy, and a pretty good one, I think, as we all have seen. And they let him out of the building, and they got pennies for the dollar. They completely mismanaged it. Now, the reason they did, I think, ultimately, out of loyalty to Tom Brady, I understand it. I understand why the Kraft family is loyal to Tom Brady. And Patriots fans want Tom Brady to play for as long as he can. And that's fine. Like, that's absolutely fine. But I also understand why Belichick would be totally upset about giving up on the quarterback of the future and having to start over and draft another one this year, probably. And you're not sure if he's ultimately going to end up being the guy. I've said from the beginning, I think they should have franchise tagged Jimmy, kept him for one more year. I'd let Tom have this year and then next year. And then, yeah, like, you know, not thanks for everything. But you also have to wonder, like, Tom, you've accomplished everything at this point. You have your five or six rings. You've made more money in the world than, you know, any athlete. Like, what else do you have to prove? Time to move on with your next phase in life and go start TB12 and spend more time with your family. Like, you start to have to wonder, why does he continue to keep playing when he's already proved everything there is to prove?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think a lot of great athletes are just driven by people who doubt them. But I think part of this is, you mentioned, you know, go do TB12. The best branding, the best marketing for TB12 is Tom Brady being on the field, playing at a high level until he's 45 years old. All right, we're going to take a brief time out here on Season Ticket. When we come back, we're going to talk more about this story by Seth Wickersham, detailing a potential rift between Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, between Bill Belichick and Robert Kraft. And we're going to talk more about what we just talked about, which was the role that TB12 and Alex Guerrero have played in creating tension at Patriot Place. Stay tuned for that. Welcome back. If you like Season Ticket, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you got your podcasts. Remember, subscribing is the best way to make sure you get our latest episode as soon as it's available. All right, I'm back now with Ben Volen as we continue to unpack this ESPN story by Seth Wickersham about Ranker at Patriot Place. As we mentioned before the break, Ben, Alex Guerrero is a key figure in this story by Seth Wickersham, and he talks about TB12 and sort of the idea that in the minds of some people down there, the whole TB12 thing, the whole sort of lifestyle branding and fitness and pliability and all that has sort of become like a cult.
It does certainly seem like that, especially when you've got so many players now following Brady's lead and going to see Alex Guerrero. Upwards of 30 players we've written. There's some issues there because I think Brady does put pressure on some of the younger guys to go see Alex and go see my guy and not necessarily the team's guy. And, well, if you want to curry favor with Brady, just go to TB12. We've certainly, you know, kind of heard some rumors of that. And I've, you know, you see guys in the locker room, they look at each other like, oh, where are you up to? Oh, I'm heading up to TB12 at 3 and then I'll hit you later. Like, it's just a part of the team. And I can totally understand that Belichick would get too sick of it. And like I said, he views Guerrero as maybe trying to drive a wedge in between the team. And the most interesting thing isn't that they banned Guerrero, it's that they ever let him into the organization, so to speak, in the first place.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I think they let him in because he was Brady's guy. Obviously, he had worked with Willie McGinest before, and he was helping their players and helping their players succeed. And in the story, it says that at one point, Bill was even willing to have him, this was in 2013, sit in on meetings, medical meetings with the medical staff and have access to medical records. Now, Guerrero in the story said that was not true, that he had never been privy to medical records. But the idea was, okay, this guy's helping us. He's about the team. But it seems like it's sort of flipped here, and they feel like, no, he's more about promoting his business. And you hit on a great point there, Ben, which is, do guys that are new to this team, say hypothetically, you know, you're Brandon Cooks, do you feel like in order to build a relationship and a rapport with Brady off the field that will have him throw you the ball on the field, that you need to go to TB12?
Yeah, it's a very unique and kind of bizarre relationship there. And one that no other team has. The Patriots are the only one who have their star quarterback also has a business in kind of personal training and has players on his own team going to see them, and the Patriots pay for it as well. What baffles me is why the NFL is kind of okay with this relationship, because it does seem like it's subverting the salary cap a little bit you know, the Patriots are providing this benefit to Brady by kind of establishing and legitimizing his business and paying them thousands of dollars to work on their players. We asked the NFL a few years ago if they're aware of the relationship and how's okay. And they said, yep, we're good. And I was like, why? I asked for an explanation and they refused to provide one. Just, nope, we're all good. We're aware of it. And I don't know if how many owners in the league are aware of what's going on. Cause I remember I ran it by John Mara and he's like, no, that's not happening. There's no way that's he's like, no, I'm like, no, really, this is what's going on. And so, the NFL has just decided not to pick this battle and they look the other way with this relationship. It's very bizarre. And they gave Guerrero an inch and he took a mile. Like they let him into the team and he took it and ran with it. And now he's trying to take over their strength and conditioning department for the most part. So I can understand why Belichick would resent him and would not want him around as much.
Yeah, and it is an unusual relationship to the point that until fairly recently, the players who were being treated by Guerrero and TB12, the TB12 was billing the team for Guerrero's work. So that's sort of an interesting relationship along the lines of what you talked about with the salary cap, in that Tom Brady is getting additional revenue from the Patriots when these players who are going to his facility to be treated by Guerrero, they turn around and, okay, the team has to reimburse them for it. So that is sort of a weird setup. And another thing in the story that I thought was sort of interesting was this idea that these new players come to the team and address Brady as sir. And there's obviously a great degree of deference there. So this pressure that might exist internally to do what Tom does and to work with Alex Guerrero seems to have been a big part of the falling out between Guerrero and Belichick. And there's a part of the story that says after some incidents here where Belichick felt like Guerrero was overstepping his bounds, he explained to Brady in early September that many younger players felt pressured to train at TB12 rather than with the team. This is according to the story. And Belichick asked the quarterback, what's up with that? And Brady says he doesn't know anything about that. Belichick obviously saw this as a major issue.
Yeah, no question. And Brady seems like he took it too far. Like, it's one thing for him to you know, espouse the TB12 model and to sell us electric foam rollers. But then I think it's pretty clear he definitely pressures a lot of the guys on the team, or there is a pressure. There's a peer pressure to do what Tom does. It works for him, and it, you know, Julian Edelman does it too, so let's all do it. And we've seen Gronk become a convert this year, and I mean, it definitely has some benefits. Like, Gronk is having a great season and he stayed healthy, but the issue is, it, like I've been saying, it drives a wedge in between the coaching staff and the players. And the strength and conditioning staff is not Tom Brady's department. That's the team's and Bill Belichick's. And I can understand why Belichick would be upset about Brady and Alex Guerrero trying to come in and start running things.
Yeah, and I think that's the overarching thing of this story, is that, you know, Brady is somebody who, instead of just being part of the Patriot way and a Patriots player, and he's earned some of this to a degree, but he's become sort of bigger than the team, and that's obviously an issue for Bill. Another thing that's interesting, Ben, is the idea that in the story it says that the Patriots, and it doesn't name who's saying this, but that they privately, when they evaluate Brady, see slippage in his game as a 40-year-old quarterback.
Yeah, that sounds like it's not coming from the Brady camp, that's for sure.
No, I would doubt that.
And probably not from the Kraft camp either.
Yeah, I would doubt that.
So that leaves only one camp left. You know, I think we've seen it. I mean, the last 6 or 7 games, Brady has not looked his sharpest. I did that piece last week kind of looking at, is there something wrong with him? And I didn't see anything glaring. That Pittsburgh game, he still looked pretty darn good. And he has played well this year. But, you know, it hasn't been at the same level that we saw earlier this season or for 12 games last year. Certainly, it's fair to wonder, a 40-year-old quarterback, you know, the pounding of a 4-month season, it's going to take its toll, no question. There's no doubt that Bill Belichick would have rather, I think, move forward either next year or certainly the year after with Jimmy Garoppolo, that he just does not want to stake his future to Tom Brady. And this whole trade of Jimmy Garoppolo set off alarms and bells right away, because it was just so out of character and so unlike anything the Patriots have ever done. And you know, Brady, I think his play is slipping, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, how dedicated he is to his TB12 regimen and his diet again this summer, because that's that's how he's, the only way he's going to play till he's 45. If he's just a maniac every offseason with his training and sticking to his diet. And that's the problem for a lot of guys when they get that old. It's just the you know, it becomes not worth it. They'd rather spend time with their family or their off-field stuff. So if Brady wants to keep playing, he's going to have to shake off these injuries and come back healthy and obviously still be a maniac next offseason with his training.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. And, the Brady-Belichick relationship, I'm not sure people know this, it's always been a professional relationship, and it's been a relationship of mutual respect, and it's been a relationship that's been mutually beneficial. There's no question about that. But these guys are not personally close. And I think when you're not personally close, it's easier for some sort of wedge to be driven between the two of you because your relationship is based on success. And I think this is a question we ask ourselves all the time, Ben. Who is most responsible for the Patriots dynasty? Is it Bill Belichick? Is it Tom Brady? And I think at the core of this story and at the core of this disagreement, it's that these are two really proud, accomplished guys who both feel deep down inside that they are most responsible for the Patriots' run of success.
Yeah, I'd say that's probably accurate. And certainly the part about the relationship between Brady and Belichick. I mean, I can't imagine Belichick being warm and fuzzy with anyone. I mean, maybe Linda Holiday, I guess. But otherwise, like, I think I there was a quote from Brady's dad a couple years ago that Brady and Belichick maybe have had lunch once in their entire relationship. That it's, you know, they don't go out for coffee and chat about the stock market. They're in the facility and they're breaking down X's and O's. And they're meeting twice a week. I assume they're still having those meetings this year, so it can't be too cold between them. But the part about the negativity I thought was the most interesting, that Brady's trying to be a more positive person. And, you know, we see that with some of the quotes that he posts in his locker or on social media. And he is certainly trying to be a more positive person and block out all the negativity. And I imagine Belichick is Mr. Negative around there, so.
Well, Parcells called him Coach Doom and Gloom, so I'm sure he hasn't changed over the years.
Exactly. I'm not surprised to hear that there's a wedge, and there's a lot of pride between those two as well.
So let me ask you this, Ben, as we wrap this up here. Two-part question for you. One, do you think this rancor, this discord, if you believe it, affects the Patriots in the playoffs? That's part one. Part two, this story says Kraft, Brady, and Belichick were supposed to meet to hash all this out in December. It didn't happen. I'm sure they'll meet at some point. But at the end of the day, do you think that this is the last season where you have Kraft, Brady, and Belichick as the holy trinity for this organization?
I'm going to say I think they keep it going for another year. I don't think Belichick walks off. I definitely don't think Brady retires. Brady, he's in a position where he has to play for another 3 years now because after they traded Jimmy basically for Tom Brady out of loyalty. So he has to keep playing. And I don't think Belichick walks off, but he could be faced with a daunting offseason where he's replacing both coordinators, possibly his top GM, and he's going to have to start looking for another quarterback successor. So it's a lot on his plate. And so if he did walk away, I don't know if anyone would blame him. He had it all lined up and then it all kind of blew up in his face, I guess.
He's not going to be Marv Levy. He doesn't want to be there at 70 years old. He is 65 years old.
Right. So I the end is coming soon, but I think probably next year might be more realistic for him. I don't know. I don't see him walking off quite yet.
And in terms of this affecting the team this year in the playoffs, what do you think about that?
I don't think it will. I mean, they've dealt with this all season, and certainly, Guerrero was kicked off the team flights and the sideline at the bye week, and that was 8 games ago, and they went 7-1. So I don't think it's going to affect them too much. If anything, this classic Patriots, it'll galvanize them, us against the world, all that stuff. It might affect them because Brady's not playing his best, and the offense is struggling, and Brady's a little frustrated, and they might get knocked off by, say, a Kansas City Chiefs or maybe a Pittsburgh Steelers. But I don't think this actual discord is going to affect them.
Yeah, there's no better team, and there are not two better guys at being able to eliminate and ignore distractions and compartmentalize and execute than the Patriots and Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. So I don't think it will affect them in the playoffs. However, just reading this story, I will say that I think we all knew that one day this will end. It's a great run, probably the greatest run in pro football history. When it does end, it's going to be messy. And I think you can already tell. You can see reading this story, it portends that when the end does come, whenever that day is, it's not going to be clean, and you're going to have a lot of hard feelings and unhappy people in Foxborough when this thing finally does break up. All right, Ben, we have to wrap it up. We could talk about this for hours, but we have to wrap it up here. I really appreciate you coming on and adding some real insight to this situation.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Chris.
All right, that's Ben Volin of the Boston Globe, senior NFL writer. You're going to want to catch him on Twitter and also in the pages of the Boston Globe and bostonglobe.com. That's it for this edition of Season Ticket, a production of the Boston Globe and WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. It's been a busy week for all of us here, and we appreciate everyone who makes the show possible, especially producer Steve Safran, who celebrated a huge birthday this week, the Big 5-0. Belated happy birthday to you, Steve. And he's one of our producers, and I couldn't do this show without him. Here are some other folks I could not do this show without. Josh Schwartz, Scott Thurston, Joe Sullivan, John Parati, Paul Vikas, Jessica Alpert, Matt Reed, and our intern, Brennan Coughlin. I'm Chris Gasper. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll catch you on Monday.